Okay, Proverbs 12. We actually jumped ahead. We went through verse 12 and then we dropped down and did verses 24 through 28. So we're going to go back now and look at verse 13. And this section, in a lot of ways, deals with the tongue. So let's pick up verse 13. The wicked is ensnared by the transgression of his lips, but the righteous will come through trouble. The wicked is ensnared by the very evil that comes out of his mouth. Think of gossip. If we gossip all the time, if we gain a reputation as someone who gossips, how do people feel about us? They want to be around us? Yeah, they don't want to be around us. They don't trust us. We lose our trustworthiness because we're so caught up in that. And if we lie long enough about things, let's just consider wicked fruits that can come from our mouth. Certainly lying is part of that, and we'll talk more about it in just a little bit. If we lie long enough and we get caught in our lies, what comes from that? What kind of reputation do we gain? Yeah, it's shameful. Nobody trusts you. All of these things. Not to mention the threat of judgment. Not to mention the way God feels about it and the fact that it would be a sin. But all of even the immediate consequences in this world that come from just not being able to control our mouths and not being able to speak truth or not desiring to do it. Verse 14, a man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. A righteous man escapes trouble by speaking the truth. His words are wise. His words are pure. Mark your places there in Proverbs. Let's go to Colossians 4 quickly. Paul writing to the saints at Colossae, describing what their speech ought to be like. Colossians 4, verse 6. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. Let your speech be with grace. Let it be seasoned with salt. What does that mean?
Think of what you're going to say and how you're going to say it.
Yeah, absolutely. Weigh it out before you say it. We'll talk more about that in just a minute. Seasoned with salt. Salt brings flavor. And we talked earlier, salt, in one of our previous classes, salt also preserves. My speech needs to be like that. It doesn't need to be destructive and tearing down. Now again, if sin is there and needs to be rebuked, then we rebuke it. But this is not talking about rebuking sin. This is just talking about sins of the tongue. Just sort of letting your tongue run wild and gossip and lies and things like that, wickedness that would come from it. I turn back to Proverbs. Let's look at verses 15 and 16. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. A fool's wrath is known at once, but a prudent man covers shame. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. Why can't you teach a fool?
They don't want to be taught.
That's the reason. You can't teach a fool, by the way, because they will not allow themselves to be taught. That's why they're a fool. We've talked about the idea at the beginning of chapter 12. It's the very first verse. He who hates correction is stupid. You can't fix that. They have to change that. Their heart has to change. A fool knows everything. He will not seek wise counsel because whose counsel does he think is best anyway? His. Why does he need you? He could just ask himself. He already knows everything. So certainly you and I can't tell him anything that would help him out. He doesn't listen to those who would try and correct him and help him because they dare to disagree with him. We can go and find examples of this in the Bible, of those who saw themselves as right in their own eyes. What about the book of Judges? There was no king in Israel at that time, but everyone did what was right in his own eyes. What was Israel like during that period?
Chaos.
Absolute chaos. What a mess. So much. They would They would have some bright spots when those faithful judges would come, but then after that, the people would fall into the same old stuff. They didn't respect God. Jeremiah talks about it, warns the same idea, those doing what was right in their own sight. Good. Any comments on any of these verses so far? Bob.
Israel was probably about like Atlanta is now. It's pretty bad up there. Again, so I'm kind of hesitant to go up there. When I used to drive a truck all over Atlanta and not even worry about getting mugged or anything, but now I'm not like that.
Jeremiah 10:23. O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not a man who walks to direct his own steps. The problem, and even the problems that Bobby just pointed out, men don't realize that. Men don't realize that they need the Lord to direct their steps. They think they can direct their own steps just fine. And why would they want anybody else's direction? And that's the same problem. Again, going back to the judges, that period, Israel wouldn't listen to God. And that's what got them into that trouble to begin with. Judah, when Jeremiah is warning, they wouldn't listen to God. And that's what had gotten them in the trouble that they were in. The same is true for our age and our society at this time. If we won't listen to God, if we reject Him and come up with our own ways, it's going to get us into trouble. Every single... It always has. Whenever man's done that, it's gotten him into trouble. What did the wise do? We talked about the fool. The fool won't listen. He refuses to listen to any advice, any counsel. What does the wise do?
Listen to God and do what He says.
Yeah. And because of that, they end up becoming wiser. So you've got this thing, the wise become wiser, because if you rebuke a wise man, what will he do? If he's wise,
he'll become wiser.
He'll accept it. He'll make whatever changes are necessary. And then when he does that, he just keeps getting wiser and wiser. So those who are righteous keep growing in that, and then the fools just keep getting worse because they get farther and farther away from it. Good. Let's put 17 with us. Let's talk about 16 and 17 together. He who speaks truth declares righteousness, but a false witness deceit. A fool acts without giving thought and consideration to a situation. He snaps. He just sort of flies off the handle. The problem is what he's reacting to may not even be real, because the fool often doesn't wait to get the whole story. He hears a little bit, and then what does he do?
Runs with it.
Yeah, he just takes that and runs with it. He reacts on whatever he's heard, may not even have the whole story. You call them hair triggers, right? Just immediately, just looking and waiting to go off. The foolish man does that. He may take something the wrong way and get mad over something that was not even meant as an insult. So we have to be very careful with this as well. We can imagine wrongs and then take those wrongs that we've come up with and just let them get worse and let them build and build and build. And they were never meant that way to begin with. I think of brethren who have gotten so mad at each other because they didn't even have the full story. And then, you know, a couple weeks go by, they're just furious with each other. And it's not even true. Who do you think's behind that? Yeah, absolutely, Satan is. That's what he does. You plant a seed of doubt. You plant a little bit of chaos. And if nobody fixes it, is there any doubt when Jesus talks about how to address a problem between a brother? When there's a personal sin between me and another brother, I'm to immediately go to him and try to take care of it? Why do you think he did that? Why that way? Why not immediately just go off and blow some trumpets and let everybody know? If the problem is between you and me, why does Jesus instruct to immediately go to your brother?
Probably that's what it is.
If it gets taken care of then, who else knows about it?
Nobody but the two of you.
It's gone. And Bobby's right. Nobody but the two of you know about it. So here's you and here's me. We have a problem and we fix it. And it stops there. Then if you forgive me, then it's done. And the whole congregation doesn't even know. It's like it never happened. It's taken care of. So we see the wisdom in him giving that counsel. Fools don't do that. Fools want everybody to take their side, whether they have the whole knowledge or not. They just want to be right. And so it just stirs up strife and destruction, wreak havoc on congregations, certainly ruin families and friendships. Any other thoughts on any of these sections? Joe, yes, sir.
I think we need to be very careful when we find ourselves engaged in an already unrighteous environment and become combative. You lost before you ever began.
Yeah.
The thing is to shun, stay away from those environments that lead to that kind of combativeness. That way you don't have to worry about the adversarial commentary from your opposition. You know that his behavior is going to be that. You know that what you're trying to convey, if you're conveying what is righteous, he's probably not going to accept it anyway. So if you can't leave him, change the subject, just don't indulge him.
Yeah. You know, that's the other thing with fools. It doesn't take very long to know when somebody listens to nobody's counsel but their own, and you know, you can spin your wheels. You want to, yeah. There's that whole idea of not casting pearls before swine, and we can do that. At some point, we have to realize that this person doesn't want to know truth, and it's just going to just accelerate into more problems. So we be wise. We try to teach truth. Try to be a good example. But as Joe said, I mean, you can't make somebody believe truth. You can't make somebody act right. I wish you could. Well, you could solve a lot of problems if you could force somebody to act right, but we can't. We try to give good counsel, try to give a good example, but then they're ultimately going to have to make that decision themselves.
You know, Lance, I think when we talk about, you know, disagreement with brethren and, you know, stuff like that, you know, we say we're only human and those type of things like that, but I just think those things should never be. We should never have those type of things in the Lord's church between one another, but we get in such a heated argument, even with each other, it shouldn't never get to the point where we can't talk about it instead of you know how sometimes people can get. I just think it should never get to a point like that, especially when we know what the Bible teaches about love and respect and those things like that, you know, and some people just say, well, that just me or those type of things. It just, to me, those things shouldn't happen.
Yeah. And it does come back to a lack of love. And again, this is not talking about dealing with sin or the point Norris is making. I have heard of brethren in a congregation, there wasn't elders there, and they were just trying to make decisions about the building. Like the carpet needed to be changed and what color it was going to be. And they'd get so mad over each other, they wouldn't talk forever. That's the kind of point I think that Norris is making. That's ridiculous. Over something like that? Really? We're not going to be able to be around each other and show affection and love for each other because I didn't get my way? But it happens. I mean, that is a reality. As ridiculous as that example sounds, it's a true example. I know of a case where it has happened. We just got to... Pride causes that kind of stuff. And we need to just do away with that sort of thing. Absolutely.
The last impression you have on new converts or somebody like that type of stuff like that, it's devastating.
Yeah, it is.
You know, you don't take it personally, but you just think like that person because you like that, but you just don't know what it said off to somebody, and not just a new convert, but somebody older who had respect for you as a Christian, or did you do something like that, you can really lose your influence on somebody.
And what if somebody's visiting and you're trying to teach them truth and they see that kind of behavior? I just ruined any good teaching that I may have done leading up to that. That's the point, Bobby.
1 Timothy 5 is filled with good information for it covers everybody. It tells how to treat the older men, how the older women should be treated, the younger women, the younger men. If we would just obey that example, the church will be better, life will be better.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been studying the Sermon on the Mount. You talk about humbling. You go through and read those applications that Jesus is making, and you know, if any of us go through that and say, I've never violated any of these things, well, I would be surprised, right? You know, because I go through it and just feel ashamed at ways that I've dealt with things in the past. And again, going with what Bobby said, if you would just follow these things, you could avoid so many problems. So many problems wouldn't even come up to begin with. Going along with this idea, again, continuing about the tongue, look at verse 18. There's one who speaks like the piercings of a sword, but the tongue of the wise promotes health. Tongue is dangerous, a dangerous weapon, and the foolish sling it around like a sword. I mean, of course, Solomon writing in the age when that would have been the weapon of choice. So I mean, let's use that example. If we're living in that day and age, what would have happened if you were careless with a sword? Or yourself. I mean, you can hurt yourself. You can hurt anybody near you. I mean, you use the example of a gun today. What if you're careless with a gun? You can hurt yourself. You can hurt people around you. People can even be seriously wounded and killed by those things. It just shows us the dangerousness here of a fool's words there. James 3. Remember what it talks about the tongue can do. It can set a forest on fire if it's not controlled. We've talked about that section before. It's a little part of our bodies. Right? The tongue, not that big. But once it comes out, what can you do with your words? I mean, you can say you're sorry. I mean, that's true. But can you ever take it back and make it like it never happened? I mean, it's out there. And then it has to be dealt with. James makes the point. We've been given these tongues to bless God and encourage brethren. And it is a shame when it's not used for that, when it's used for wrong instead. Bobby.
The politicians, they don't admit they lie. Now they say they misspoke.
Yeah. And knowing that they do that, and I think everybody in here knows that politicians are not known to be completely above board. Do you trust them? No, of course not. What is it? The old saying, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me for believing you again. You know, I should have known better. After you've lied to me so many times, at some point, I need to realize that you're just not trustworthy. Going along with that, look at verse 19. A truthful lip shall be established forever, but a lying tongue is for but a moment. So let's talk about what we just mentioned. If somebody is known for honesty, how long does that last? I mean, when do you stop trusting them? If they continue in that way, you always trust them. Man, there are people in this room, you could tell me pretty much anything and I believe you. I mean, you could tell me it's snowing outside, I would be surprised. But, okay. There are people on the other side of that too, though, who could tell me the sun is out and I would go check because I don't believe a thing that they say. And I don't know why I was studying through this. It says a lying tongue is but for a moment. A lying tongue is until it's found out. And then everybody knows and you just completely lose respect for whoever is saying it. Once we get a reputation for being a liar, that's hard to get rid of. That is something that follows us. There was a guy I went to school with through elementary school, all through high school. We'll call him Richard. Richard lied all the time. And I remember we were in eighth grade and everybody was talking about it was deer season. So they're all talking about hunting and the things they were going to do. And they were talking about the ones that they had killed already. And everybody was just kind of just excited about it. And he stands up and says, "That's nothing. I climbed a tree this past Saturday and I saw a deer below me. I didn't have my gun with me. All I had was my knife. I jumped out, killed him right there on the spot." And we looked at him and we said, "Are you serious?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm serious." And we said, no, we know you're lying about that. Do you seriously expect us to believe this? Richard was a big boy. I mean, him getting up the limb to begin with is a stretch. But leaping out and stabbing the deer, come on, man. We harassed him about that for the next 5 years. And every time, by the end of the day, and part of the fault was mine, by the end of the day, I was telling everybody I saw, did you hear what Richard did to him? He leaped out of a tree and killed a deer with a spoon. I'm serious. He told me. He said it. You know, it's so ridiculous. I ran track with him for 4 years in high school. He would say, hey, man, I got the line assignments. You're in the final heat, lane 4. What did I go do? I went and checked. I went to the officials and said, where's my lane assignment? He could have told me anything. I didn't believe it. Ever. He had gained a reputation for being a liar. That stuff's hard to get away with. Now, his was ridiculous. But this is true, right? When people see us as somebody who can't be trusted, very hard to win that trust back. Yeah, Christy.
It just brings back memories when the children were little. I remember, you know, little tiny lies that they might tell that, you know, I kind of didn't take seriously, but I remember Andy scolded them pretty strongly, like they just totally disobeyed us. And at first I was, it wasn't that big a deal. And then after I thought about it, it was a big deal, and you need to make a big deal out of the teeny little lies that, you know, they might have told them. 2 years old, and anyway, just...
No, absolutely.
Children, start them young.
Yeah.
With the little things.
I appreciate Andy for doing it, because if they're allowed to get away with the little ones, what's going to stop them from doing something more? And a lie is a lie, right? It's a great example.
And
he
didn't know how serious it is.
Absolutely.
At a young age.
Yeah. I mean, we go back to Proverbs 6. We know how God sees it. It disgusts him. It's called an abomination in his sight. If it disgusts him, it ought to disgust us too. A great example. Here's the other side. First of all, there's that. Lying is a sin. The other side is, you know, if you tell the truth all the time, you don't have to keep up with stuff. You know, I remember lying to people coming up, and you do it long enough, you forget who you told what, and where the pieces fell, and then somebody kind of catch you in it, and you're like, oh, no, and you had to spin another one real quick to keep it going. That is exhausting. I mean, not to mention it's a sin, but you lose credibility with everyone. It's hard on you to just, you're living a lie, and you're stretching it on and on. If you just tell the truth, what do you have to worry about as far as remembering what you said?
And you don't have to have a good memory if you tell the truth.
And I don't have a good memory.
Yeah.
Just tell the truth. It's easy. Because I know what I've told everybody. It's the same story. It's the same one. It's easy. Yeah. Again, not to mention the fact that lying is something that God hates. Good. And 22 goes with that. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. Those who deal truthfully are His delight. We want Him to delight in us. We want Him to look and see the things that we're doing, and they bring a smile to His face. They make Him happy. If we deal with deceitful ways, He's not going to be pleased with us. So, good. Verse 23. This will finish the section up there in chapter 12. A prudent man conceals knowledge, but the heart of fools proclaims foolishness. There are things that you and I know, particularly that we know about others, that we simply do not have to broadcast to the rest of the world. Right? There's information that you have and that I have that other people don't need to know. And we need to be prudent about that. Some things just don't need to be shared. Now, you imagine, you know, a brother in Christ who used to struggle with stealing. Would you introduce him to everybody? From then, he totally repented of it. He's faithful now. And you're like, here's my brother Chris. You know, he used to steal stuff all the time. Why would you tell anybody that? There's just no reason to pass certain knowledge on. Prudent man knows when to speak and knows just when to keep his mouth shut. We've seen that idea in Proverbs before. But fools proclaim foolishness. Sasha and I were talking about this yesterday. We live in a headline society. Right? Newspapers and more frequently now the internet. Journalists used to actually have to, or they were expected to do research and put facts out. That is not a requirement for being a journalist today. I don't know if you've noticed. You used to go back 50 years, and when you saw headlines, they were statements of fact. They weren't the opinion of the journalist in there too. This father does awful thing by punishing child for whatever. Awful according to who? According to the one writing. You know, it's so biased now. I can't read Yahoo News anymore because for a million reasons. And we live in that headline. We look for shock value, and we want to see. We see a headline that sounds like it might have something naughty in it, and everybody just eats that stuff. It gets a million hits. That's the realm of foolishness, and fools proclaiming foolishness. And unfortunately, as a society, we like that stuff. We need to be very careful. Going back to what Joe said earlier, be careful what you expose yourself to and what you get yourself involved in. Because so many of these things, just we can dig a hole for ourselves. Any comments on any of 12?
That includes the social media that's going around now.
Oh, yeah.
These children, and I call them children, the teenagers, they get out there and do things and say things and take pictures of themselves and throw it on the internet. What do they think? What are they thinking?
And unfortunately, and that's true, unfortunately, some of those children are about 42, 43 years old. Because it doesn't stop with just them.
They have no concept of themselves at that point.
And this, let's go back. We mentioned the idea. When you say something, you can't really take it back. When you put something on the internet, you post a picture, you post a comment, you sure can't take it back. You can delete it. But everybody who saw it, and there it is. And now it's... Social media, does it have advantages? Yeah, you can talk to people you might not have been able to talk to, and you can teach the gospel, but it is very, very susceptible to danger for Christians as well. We had an article on that a couple weeks ago that I thought was very good. Just be wise. Don't do foolish things. Good. Norris, I think you
answered. I was just going to say, like what you were saying, a lot of things now, written, like you said, done, and based on people's opinion, and not the facts of it. And today, people don't care whether it's just their opinion. You know, they don't care whether they're dealing with facts and truth no more.
Yeah.
And we see a society that's going that way.
Well,
along those same lines, 1 Timothy 5:13 talks about the church not supporting. It says they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers, also busybodies, speaking things which they ought not. So, the thing that we say, we need to be careful about saying them, and even repeating the thing that we've heard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just let it go.
And we talked about the effect it can have on us individually if we are gossipers or liars. And it does. It affects us individually. Does it have an effect on the church?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if somebody knows that I'm a member here at Eastside in this local congregation and I'm a liar, what do they think about you guys? At the very least, you tolerate it, right? I mean, it doesn't. If you're not doing the same thing. So certainly it's not just limited to the effect it has on us and our reputation. It can damage the reputation of Christ. And if you haven't noticed, the world is looking for a reason to badmouth Christianity and Christians. Don't give them any more. I mean, they're digging up stuff and they're just begging, wanting it so badly. You and I don't need to give them any more fuel for that. They want it badly enough as it is. Good. Okay, well, let's go to chapter 13. Proverbs 13. Really, chapters 13, 14, and 15 can kind of all be summed up with a couple verses in chapter 14, verses 26 and 27. In the fear of the Lord there is strong confidence, and His children will have a place of refuge. The fear of the Lord is a fountain of life to turn one away from the snares of death. And really that, I mean, you could use those verses to describe the entire book of Proverbs. That would certainly be fitting. But especially with these three chapters, 13, 14, and 15, it's certainly appropriate. Let's get right into it. Verse 1. A wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. I wish there were more of our young people here this morning to hear this. We've talked about it in Ephesians, and we've talked about it previously in Proverbs. For the young, listen to your parents, especially if they're godly parents, because they have wisdom to offer. Why do parents teach their children things that they may not want to hear? Is it for the fun of it? Is it because I love to see the look on my children's face when something I say makes them upset. I mean, is that what parents are going for? Why do they teach these things? Somebody said, because they love them. Because they love them. That is certainly one reason. Why else?
They've been through the experience and they don't want them to suffer the same thing.
Because I've probably done it and I can tell you how the consequences go. They never work out. Right. Kristen, you got something?
I just have to protect them.
Yeah, to protect them from troubles, things that maybe we've seen or we've possibly been through, or things that we just know are going to end badly. You don't have to go through some things to know that path is going to end badly, and you're trying to keep your children from going through that. Listening to that advice can spare us a whole bunch of heartache. It truly can. For those who won't listen, verse 1 calls them scoffers, but a scoffer does not listen to a rebuke. They rebel. Where does that rebellion lead?
Usually down the wrong path.
Exactly where you didn't want them to go. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So this is the warning. And here you have Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived, giving the advice. And we saw it especially in the early chapters, as of a father to his son. Son, please, please listen to me. I'm trying to spare you all kinds of heartache. So when that wisdom was given, and again, I stress, especially from godly parents, you know, that is it's instruction not only from experience, but from God's Word. So it's going to be true and it's going to be right. And certainly we need to take heed to it. Bobby?
Yes, I know I've said this before, but I don't think I can say it too much. That's all the more reason I think children don't need any special programs outside of Bible study. Bible should be all that they need. They don't need any thing to play with while Bible study is going on, while the sermon is being preached. They need to listen and learn what God wants them to do. They can play at home.
I think sometimes we treat our children like they're completely ignorant. Oh yeah, they're so little. They're not going to pick up on this. Well, you know, we could talk about this subject around them, but they're not going to pick up on this. They're going to pick up on more than we give them credit for. And it blows my mind what 2-year-olds can put together, what they can piece together. And I know it only gets more and more as they get older. If I start them on the foundation of God's Word, what's better than that? I mean, what's better than that? And if they get a foundation now, if they understand basic things, what are they going to be able to do in 10 years?
Understand more of God's Word.
15 years, 20 years, they're going to be grounded in it, Lord willing, if their hearts will be that way. If they choose to serve the Lord, they will certainly have the foundation and the knowledge to do it. What if I let them play for the first 8 years? I just I don't care what you do, just don't make any noise. What if that's what they do? Where's their foundation now? It's on whatever they've been playing with, or their iPad, or whatever it is. It's on something else. So yeah, I do think Bobby's point is very, very valid. Verse 2. A man shall eat well by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the unfaithful feeds on violence. Again, you've got a comparison. Words can do so much good. On the tongues of the righteous, the gospel is taught, and people are encouraged, and there's hope that is brought. On the other side, what comes from the words of the unrighteous? chaos and trouble and violence and so many things. Put verse 3 with it. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips shall have destruction. You ever said something you wish you could take back? Yeah, I have. But the words just kind of go. They're just, and you can almost see them. If you could catch them, you know, if they were solid, you would grab them and try to shove them back in. It's too late then. They're out and you can't take them back. By guarding our mouths, we guard our souls. If I don't know the whole story, why am I telling it to others? If I don't know the truth of the matter, why am I going to go and tell it to others? Is it because I want others to get riled up over this gospel? Is it because I want to be the first one to break the news and break the story? Is it because I feel like everybody needs to hear my opinion on the matter? None of those are good reasons. So why would I do it? It says I need to guard my mouth. Certainly, Solomon's writing, you've got the idea of fortresses and castles and things like that. When a fortress, you've got the city or a palace surrounded by a strong wall. When they were on guard against the enemy, the gates were closed, right? Not only did you close the gates, you posted guards at the gate. If anybody was going to be allowed in the gate or out the gate, what did the guards do? They checked them, right? Same thing that happens to you when you try to get on a plane today. They check you. What are they checking you for? What were they checking them for?
See if you have permission to go out.
For the right authority. They're checking you for bad things too, right? That you're not bringing any... In the case of using the example here of guarding against a city, somebody coming in, could that be a danger? Yeah, you better check them and make sure they're not bringing something dangerous in. Somebody leaving and going out, could that be a danger? Yeah, they may be taking something they don't need to take out there to the enemy. So the guard's job was to check them and make sure they, as Bill said, should be going out or coming in. Now make that application to our words. Can't we make an application from that? Post a guard at your lips. And before anything goes through, make sure the guard checks it first. It might take us a little longer to have a conversation because we might actually have to think about what we say instead of just spew it and then like, ooh, should have let that one go. But if we do this, we post a guard, it'll keep us from so many instances of trouble that just a quick tongue got us into. Bobby?
It's about like getting checked before you get on an airplane. You have a gun or a knife, you wish you hadn't had it.
Yeah.
If you get caught.
Yeah.
And more than likely you will get caught because I think those computers pick up everything that you have in your pockets.
You know, that stuff may be aggravating to us when we're trying to travel. Being checked and it slows down our progress and all that. You know what would be more aggravating? If the dude behind me blew up while I was sitting in front of him on the plane. That would cause me immensely more trouble than, or if he pulled a gun, than me being, you know, inconvenienced for 15 minutes. So, you know, again, I don't want to go off on a sideline defending airport security or anything. But the point is, guards are there to do their job. They're there to protect and to watch over. And we need to make sure that we have those guards in place over our own words. Let's look at maybe one more. We've got time for one more verse there. Verse 4, the soul of a lazy man desires but has nothing. The soul of the diligent shall be made rich. Where did work ethic come from? Who gave the idea of a good, strong work ethic?
God.
God did. Absolutely. Let's go to Genesis 3. It is certainly an expectation that he has had from his creation. Now granted, in Genesis 3, after sin comes in, it seems that the work got much more difficult. But even before this, you can go back to Genesis 2, did man have work to do? He did. He was to tend the garden even then. So God has always expected His creation to work. Certainly it gets more difficult. Genesis 3 verse 19, "In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you shall return." So from the sweat of your face you shall eat bread. Go to certainly one that's very applicable to us. Go to 2 Thessalonians. Second Thessalonians chapter 3. When you get there, someone will read verse 10 for us.
"Well, even when we were with you, we commanded you this, that anyone would not work Jesus God."
You think Paul's making a point? How does God feel about laziness? And this is a pretty big command here. If a man will not work, he shouldn't eat. Now that's from the apostle. That is from the Holy Spirit giving this command. Now, you know, notice what it says. It doesn't say if a man cannot work. This is dealing with the heart of the individual. He could work. He just what? "Well, I ain't going to do it. I'm not going to do it." He's lazy. He's unwilling to do the work. And Paul says, "Neither shall he eat." So again, this gives us an idea of the fact that God has no respect for laziness. If I think this world owes me something, I need to get over myself. This world doesn't owe me anything. God doesn't owe me anything. It's true. He's given us work to do in this life. He expects us to take it seriously. It's true in spiritual things too. And we're here in 2 Thessalonians. You can go forward a couple books to 2 Timothy 2 and 15. I know you're familiar with it. Does God expect diligence in spiritual things? Absolutely, He does. Well, let's read it. Verse 15 of 2 Timothy 2. "Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth." The Bereans, we can read of them in Acts 17 doing it. What if I don't do that? What if I'm not a diligent doer and seeker of God's word and His will?
Yeah, we're lazy.
And how does He feel about it? He won't accept it. He won't accept it. Just as we can go back to the point Paul made about physical laziness, God won't accept it. It makes Him sick. Spiritual laziness, His Son died for me. And if I'm too lazy to do anything about that, He certainly isn't going to accept that. It disgusts Him. And He rejects that as well. Any final thoughts? That would be a good place for us to close.
But you know, that's, I think, the reversal of pain today. Like what it said, the soul, it should be, but the soul of the good shall be made real. But we see more and more of the soul of the lazy man. God had nothing to do. You know, those things, those contrasts that we talked about in the spot where we see them as a bad thing happening more now than the good thing.
When you've got a society that thrives on evil, you see more and more of that coming to pass. Yeah. But ultimately, what's the reward for those who would ignore God's ways and do it? What kind of reward is that? Yeah, it's punishment. So, you know, again, don't think they're getting away with anything. It's certainly, there's a reckoning that will come to pass. Okay, we'll pick up in chapter 13, verse 5, Lord willing, next Sunday.